97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
It's Mike Elam sitting in for Mark Reardon today at 97.1 FM Talk. All right, Sue, I know this song, but I don't remember this song.
SOS Band.
SOS Band.
Take your time. Do it right.
Oh, that's true. That's where this goes.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are funny. This is kind of how I imagine myself being with music, like, from what I grew up with in, like, 30 years.
Yeah, this is a little look-see into your world when you get old.
That's one. I remember that one. That was a good one.
This is it. Yeah. Remember, our music was awesome. Your kids' music sucks. You know, our music was good.
That's right.
Jeez. Jeff Mordock is joining us on the guest line. He's a White House correspondent for the Washington Times. Jeff, what was your favorite musical genre? Are you a 70s, 80s, 90s? You're probably a big hip-hop guy, aren't you?
I am 90s. Grunge, alternative, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, all of that.
Oh, so I can do some grunge. I do like some Pearl Jam. Jeremy spoke in class today. You gotta love it.
It's a reflection of when I grew up, you know, and I think it's for everybody, their favorite genre goes back to when they grew up.
I think you're right. I mean, Sue and I are similar ages. She's obviously a number of years younger than me, but we had similar taste of the 70s and 80s that we like. So that was very good. Hey, man, your life just never seems to slow down. It seems like there's always something new going on. I'm just curious when you're talking with your correspondent friends running around, Trump's got a big announcement on a particular subject that he's not going to tell us what the subject is. And the big announcement, biggest ever, is coming on Thursday, Friday, or Monday. It's coming some point. What do you think the big announcement is, Jeff? Where do you think he's going with this?
Well, what I love is it's so super secret, he can't even tell us the day he's going to announce it. It's that secret. That's my favorite part of it. Maybe it's Thursday. Maybe it's Monday. It's so important and so secret, I can't tell you.
I would tell you, but I'd have to kill you at that point. So we're going to have to wait. That's just pretty funny.
We don't know. I mean, speculation is rampant on just about everything. I know he was asked if it was a trade deal. They're negotiating a number of trade deals. He says not necessarily a trade deal. He seemed to imply that it wasn't a trade deal. Sometimes he says things to throw people off. You can take that however you want to take it. I don't know. I've asked other people. They do not know. It seems a lot of rank speculation here. It is right before he heads to the Middle East, so it could be a big announcement, maybe something related to the Abraham Accords. Maybe he's securing another Middle East investment into the United States. Those are just some possibilities, because you'd think whatever it is he wants to announce, he's leaving the country, so he'd want to capitalize that on that week. So it would kind of make sense it has something to do with the Middle East, but what that could be, who knows? Or I could be way off. I don't, you know, none of us know.
But it's fun to speculate, isn't it? I mean, it just adds a whole other level of, hey, what else can we find to talk about with Donald Trump? He just keeps coming up with more reasons to stay in the headlines.
Well, he does. And it really underscores his ability as being a showman, you know, that we're going to keep talking about this announcement all week. Our focus is going to be on this announcement all week. And I think he's a master at that. He's a master of capturing our attention. I mean, I've covered administrations, these world leader visits, and they're always staid and boring, and they sit in the Oval Office and they have a chat. And now you have these combative, almost WWE-style foreign leader visits like we had with Mark Carney today.
I thought that was pretty funny when Carney even plays along and says, "Now I want to know. I'm on the edge of my seat. I want to find out what the announcement's going to be, too."
But even beyond that, you know, him and Carney kind of having a bit of a row over whether Canada's going to be the 51st state. And you got Carney looking at the camera mouthing, "Never, never, never." And Trump's like, "No, it's going to happen." And Carney's like, "Never." And Trump's like, "Never say never." When I was in the real estate business, people used to say never all the time. And next thing you know, it would happen.
Actually, so, hang on just a second. Hey, Ethan, cut number 9 is Trump going back and forth with Carney about, is Canada for sale? Here's what that sounded like.
There are tremendous benefits to the Canadian citizens, tremendously lower taxes, free military, which honestly we give you essentially anyway, because we're protecting Canada if you ever had a problem. But I think it, you know, it's it would really be a wonderful marriage because it's two places that get along very well. They like each other a lot.
Well, if I may, as you know from real estate, there are some places that are never for sale.
That's true.
We're sitting in one right now, you know, Buckingham Palace that you visited as well.
That's true.
And having met with the owners of Canada over the course of the campaign last several months, it's not for sale, won't be for sale ever. But the opportunity is in the partnership and what we can build together.
But never say never. Never say never.
There you go, Jeff. Never say never. I'm not closing the door on this.
Yeah, but it's fascinating, and not just with Kari, but you've seen it. He's had 12 world leaders at the White House, and you know the Zelensky thing aside, which was sort of almost a special event.
Right.
All the other ones have generated controversy like that too. It's turned the staid, boring event where they have a couple of canned statements into must-see TV.
Well,
and that's what he Trump's doing with this surprise announcement.
He keeps coming up with these different ways to poke the bear, so to speak. Like, what do you think about this whole thing of I'm going to reopen Alcatraz? Do you think he has any intention of reopening Alcatraz?
No, I think he throws things out there to get the media to move, to get the media to jump. I'll give you a great example is in January, he talked repeatedly about going to Fort Knox, bringing Elon Musk with him and doing an inspection and an evaluation of the gold and make sure the gold is there. And this is all he talked about for a week or two. And then we haven't heard anything about it since.
It's one of those kind of things of I'm just going to keep throwing stuff out there that you'll go run and focus on that. And while you focus on that, I'm going to do something else over here that you're really not paying that much attention to. It feels like that's the plan. I don't know if it's that coordinated, but it feels like that's what he does sometimes.
Well, I think it really depends on where you're coming from. If you like Trump, you look at it as there is a plan, and the plan is one of distraction to the media, one to keep the media moving and keeping him in the media. If you do not like Trump, you look at it as just chaos and unplanned, and he's just going by his gut. So I think how that shakes out really depends on which side of the aisle you fall on.
So how was the Canadian Prime Minister's visit? How did that go?
I mean, it went like all the other ones that we've seen. It's, you know, it's a show. And I keep going back to this. It's a show now, unlike anything I've seen before with these visits. They pull up in their big limo, and it always cracks me up because the world leaders stay at the Blair House, which is less than a 5-minute walk from the White House. It's kind of across the street. And you see all these limos and all these things drive like 5 feet into the White House gate, which always cracks me up, that you have this massive motorcade to go less than a mile. So you have, and then Trump comes, he greets him at the door, he waves, he gives him a big handshake, turns the world leader around, they pose to get photos, brings them in then into the Oval Office, they'll sit there, gives them all the opportunity they want to answer any questions they want, interject whatever they want, say whatever they want. And there's usually some controversy he kind of gins up during these things, and it's a spectacle. And I don't think Carney was any different from any of the other ones we've seen, where Starmer, the United Kingdom Prime Minister, came in, and they kind of got into a bit of a tiff on free speech in Europe. The Irish Prime Minister came, and Trump kind of went after him a little bit about how Ireland has ripped off the United States on the pharmaceutical industry for years. It's amazing what a show these things have become. Sometimes there's joint press conferences, which, by the way, we never got under the Biden administration.
Well, we didn't get any press conferences really under the Biden administration, joint or otherwise.
True. That's very true. And I think what it is with these is the point is, I think these meetings underscore Trump's America First agenda, because he's bringing these people in, he's giving them a spectacle, and then he's hammering them over what slight he sees their country is doing to the United States. And I think this is another extension. These visits are another extension of his America First agenda.
Well, obviously, the deportations continue to be a level of contention with both sides going back and forth on how's this going to work, who can be deported, what's the process, all of that. But now it seems that Trump is even throwing out an idea that says, hey, I'll pay you if you're an illegal immigrant to self-deport. Have you heard a dollar amount that they're throwing out on that?
I have heard a couple. I have heard 1,000. I've heard 10,000. They've been throwing out a few. Nothing's official, but they've been throwing out decent amounts of money, and that's going to face a lot of legal challenges. I think that will face some legal challenges. I mean, everything he's done in the immigration field has faced legal challenges. I don't see why this would be any different. It'll be also interesting to see where this goes, because one of the questions I have is if he goes forward with this, and another plan he wants to do is go forward with the DOGE checks and start sending those savings back to the American people. And, you know, the constant churn of money coming out of the government under Biden is what raised inflation. And I hope that in this administration, they're thinking if they're going to give money to immigrants, if they're going to send us DOGE checks, if they're going to send us things like that, they're aware of what the government spending could possibly mean for inflation.
I can't imagine any politician in D.C. voting to have those checks go out. I would think once they have that money recovered from something else, they're going to find something else to spend it on.
I would agree with you, but the way the president keeps hammering this idea makes me think that he's going to try to push aggressively for it. And he does have some, especially, you know, with the Republicans in charge of the House, he has the political capital now to pull that off.
It was kind of interesting at the press conference the other day of, I guess it was the cabinet meeting. I think it was where Pam Bondi was rattling off all of the different lawsuits against the administration that's been going on so far and all the different cabinet level lawsuits that they have as well. It feels like, from what you were alluding to there, the Trump administration gets sued if he says good morning. Somebody is going to file a lawsuit against the administration, and Pam Bondi has got to be looking at how many more people can I hire just to defend ourselves from all the lawsuits that are coming in. Is that a topic that you hear covered a lot?
Yes. I don't hear it covered in the media as much, but I see it in the whispers when we talk to people about what this administration can do to fend off lawsuits. And you're right. He says good morning, and there's a lawsuit over it. And what we've got is what I could see them doing is, and I'm not sure if the legality of how they would go about doing this, is what they've got to do is crack down on venue shopping, because these people are finding venues that they know they're going to get a Democrat appointed judge who's going to rule against the Biden administration, or excuse me, the Trump administration, and get all of this stuff and get their way, and then have it meander through the court systems with a temporary injunction and all of that. That's going to have to be the way to crack down on that, is crack down on the venue shopping of these laws. I'm not exactly sure how they're going to go about doing that, but that is, I think, what they're going to look into.
We're talking with Jeff Mordock. He is the White House correspondent of The Washington Times. Jeff, are you a football fan?
Huge football fan.
So I guess it doesn't bother you that it went from Redskins to Commanders. It doesn't matter. Just as long as there's football in D.C., you're a happy guy?
I am, yes.
Now, and are you a Commanders fan, or who's your team?
Commanders. We had a good year last year, and we got a good future.
I like that. Well, so Sue, we were just talking about, she's a big Steelers fan. Ethan, I didn't ask you, who's your NFL team?
Skull Vikings, baby.
Okay.
Skull Vikings.
So, you know, the NFL draft has turned out to be a huge spectacle now. It didn't used to be that big a deal at all. And now they literally have a million people show up in Green Bay for a draft, but they announced the 2027 draft is going to be on the National Mall in D.C. How excited is D.C. about hosting this event?
You know, what's interesting is whenever something comes to D.C., I can find one friend to text me and complain about it, one friend to call me and complain. I have not heard anybody call and complain about this. I have not heard anybody on sports talk radio here complain about this. I have not gotten a text from any of my friends complaining about this. DC is over the moon about this. And with the backdrop of the National Mall, it's going to be like nothing you've seen.
I can't imagine how cool of an event. Now, assuming that the weather is good, and that's always the wild card in this, right? But assuming that there is good weather, I can't imagine how cool and patriotic of an experience that is going to be able to do the draft right there on the National Mall.
One of the things I'm really curious they've not announced yet is what is going to be the backdrop behind the stage on the mall. Are they going to use the Lincoln Memorial? Are they going to use the Washington Monument? How are they going to set it up so you have a patriotic background? I think that's going to be something really cool to see. And, you know, it's part of, I think, how the next 2 years for this country are going to be amazing, which we've got the World Cup, which soccer is not a sport that interests me as much as the NFL. But we've got the World Cup coming. We've got the Olympics. We've got the 250th anniversary. I mean, the next year is going to next couple of years for sporting events in this country is going to be amazing.
I know there's a lot of people around here that are very excited about the 250th anniversary of the country next year. And I sit on a county council in St. Charles here, and we passed a resolution recognizing that. And I know the governor is putting together a group for celebrating the 250th birthday of the country. I imagine in D.C. they're probably already getting ramped up for all big celebrations across D.C. next year.
It's going to be. And, you know, President Trump has put himself in charge of the committee. So you can only imagine what this is going to be like, because he likes big, over-the-top things. It's going to be wild.
I can't wait to see it.
I can't wait either. I think, and this is 4th of July is my absolute favorite holiday in the entire world, because one, I love the summer and it's hot. Two, you just blow things up. You don't have to go over relatives for dinner. You don't have to go shop for presents and hope you got the size that fits. You just enjoy warm weather, food that's not good for you, and you watch things explode. It is the greatest holiday.
I love that. That sounds like a weekend when I grew up in the South. You know, you just watch stuff blow up and you eat a bunch of stuff that's not good for you. Jeff, what's on your agenda for this week? What are you going to be covering?
For this week, getting ready for the president's Middle East trip. One of the things that's coming due that I'm actually working on to a deep dive about is the IVF task force that the president has set up to look into recommendations for increasing IVF access. Their recommendations are due on May 19th, so that'll be here in, I would say it's the 6th, so that'll be here in less than 2 weeks. It'll be really interesting to see what they recommend. A lot of the religious coalition that sent President Trump to the White House objects to some IVF on religious grounds. It'll be interesting to see what this administration does, if anything, to appease them, if they can. And also, the IVF is an industry where there's not a lot of guardrails. It'll be interesting to see if they try to step up any kind of regulations in the industry. So there's going to be a lot to expect and a lot to look for when they come down with their recommendations.
Well, Jeff, we'll be following along with that. We appreciate your time today. This is White House correspondent for The Washington Times, Jeff Mordog. Jeff, thanks for making time for us today.
Thank you for having me, Mike. I always enjoy coming on here.
We appreciate it. Hey, we talked about the fact that it is National Teachers Day, which got me thinking about the state of education. And it has changed quite a bit over the years. And our next guest that we're going to have is Bernie DeBray. Bernie is the retired superintendent of the Fort Zumwalt School District. As a matter of fact, he is the record holder of the longest serving superintendent in the state of Missouri. We're going to talk to Bernie about the state of education and kind of what he's seen changed. When you're not superintendent anymore, you are free to say pretty much whatever you want. So I'm curious to talk to Bernie. It's coming up. It's Mike Elam for Mark Reardon today on The Mark Reardon Show at 97.1 FM Talk. It's Mike Elam sitting in for Mark Reardon today, and that is one that Sue went off the board. I did not expect to hear Donkashane as one of the picks. Hey, we said it is National Teacher Appreciation Day, and joining us on the phone is the retired superintendent for our Fort Zumwalt School District, Dr. Bernie DeBray. Bernie, how are you, sir? Do we have him?
Can you hear me?
Hey, there you go. All right, we got you now.
Okay.
Hey.
Okay, sorry.
I appreciate you. No, that was on our end. I appreciate you making the time today. Hey, before I talk to you about the state of education, I wanted to give you an opportunity. I know you were the president of Great Rivers Greenway Board of Directors, and Susan is retiring, and I know you're downtown to do a meeting with her. Just wanted to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about Great Rivers Greenway, which is a fantastic organization.
It really is. As you well know, since the county council approves me as a board member and has done so since 2010. So Great Rivers Greenway is a organization, a great regional organization that collects sales tax from St. Charles County, St. Louis County, and St. Louis City, and builds trails and trailheads throughout that whole region. And Susan Troutman has been our executive director the last 15 years. She's retiring, so I'm speaking at her retirement tonight, and was just, you know, on our board. We have the governor, Governor Jay Nixon, and McGraw-Millhaven, and a lot of, I think, prestigious individuals, and it's a great group, and Great Rivers Greenway has done a lot of good work in our community.
Well, make sure you say hello to my good friend Senator Chuck Gross while you're down there, who also serves on the board with
you. He's gonna be here. I will say that
he is a great guy. Hey, Bernie, yeah. I wanted to talk to you today since we're talking about Teacher Appreciation Day, and you spent over 40 years in education, and I'm sure
54.
You've seen. How long is that?
54.
54. I didn't want to, I shorted you. I'm sorry about that.
well, 38 as superintendent in Fort Zumwalt, but 54 in my career.
So tell me a little bit about changes that you saw over your career from where education was when you started to kind of where it was when you retired.
Well, when I started teaching at Pattonville High School in 1969, and our entire curriculum was a textbook. I taught citizenship to ninth graders, and our entire curriculum was a textbook that I was handed the summer before I started teaching and was told to teach.
Wow.
When I finished, we had specialists who did curriculum development, and it is so much more than what I started with, but it's remarkable the progress you can make with students with the right curriculum and the opportunity for teachers to work with kids.
Well, I know we were talking about everybody kind of has that teacher. When you think back in your life, that special teacher that made a real difference in your life. But I remember, you know, places like Lindenwood University used to be a teachers-only college, but it wasn't as hard, it didn't feel like, to get teachers maybe 20, 30 years ago. It's become more of a struggle to get people to go in the teaching profession these days, isn't it?
Oh, it really has. Everybody has Grow Your Own Teacher programs. Fort Zumwalt has the most recognized Grow Your Own Teacher program in the state of Missouri, where we have a foundation that supports our graduates that are selected going to college with $32,000 when they come out after 4 years. They'll teach for the school district in a high needs area for at least 4 years because of that support. So it's a well recognized Grow Your Own Teacher program. Teaching has gotten more stressful. That's one thing that's really changed since I started all those years ago. The stress is pretty high, and teachers just tend to, or individuals tend to burn out quicker. We have a great retirement system that teachers can retire with full benefits after 30 years. But sometimes that works against you in the sense that you've got people leaving the profession when they're still valuable. So that's a problem.
What is it that has led to making the profession so stressful? Why is it so much more stressful now than it used to be?
Well, one thing for sure has been COVID, the COVID years, because students, many students didn't come to school and they stayed away. They didn't get that socialization that they needed. I'm talking particularly at the younger years. They didn't get the socialization skills that they needed. And when we did come back, the kids were just they weren't ready. They weren't prepared. And I think a lot of the kids have lost time that I don't know if it'll ever be made up. Now, Zumwalt didn't experience a lot of that because we did come back face to face right away. But you look at some of our St. Louis County schools that stayed out for upwards of a year and more. I don't know how those kids will ever recover the time that they lost. So, I mean, some of it's the COVID years. Some of it is just kids are very difficult to deal with today because their parents don't, many of them, parents don't really know what proper parenting skills are. And consequently, you wind up with kids that come to school not ready to learn. And that puts a lot of stress on a teacher.
It's kind of interesting that you started off teaching citizenship, because it feels like that's a class that we should probably have taught quite a bit more these days. Because it seems like it came up at a county council work session that we had the other day, just talking about decorum in general. There seems to be a lack of decorum for public meetings, and it sounds like there's a lot of that kind of in the classroom these days, too, that it's tough for a teacher to be able to control all the craziness that's there these days because the kids aren't as disciplined maybe as they used to be.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I will say we need to get the class sizes down. Teachers can deal with individual needs if class sizes aren't as big. And I'm not talking about huge class sizes now, but 22 to 25 to 30 kids, it's just, it's difficult to deal with individual needs. So, you know, formula for improving education would be to get class sizes down, try to get those teacher salaries up so that we're attracting the best and the brightest and not overwhelm them with student problems.
Well, Bernie, I know that you have to speak here in just a little bit at Susan's going away. Just a quick thought as we go away here. Where do you think we are in terms of how can we recruit more people to be teachers? Obviously, you said getting the teachers' pay up there would be a little bit better, reducing class size. How do you think we can make this profession more attractive to people?
Well, I think one thing is, you know, people have to speak well of education. Right now, you will not always find people that speak well of education, that, oh, you don't want to be a teacher, you know, they're underpaid, whatever. I don't know that that needs to be promoted as much as letting people know what a wonderful profession it is. I did it for 54 years, and I'm telling you, I loved every minute. You know, I've told you before, at the end of my 38 years, the end of my career, I didn't want to retire. I don't particularly care for retirement because I enjoyed what I was doing. I loved being in the buildings. I loved being around kids. And I think more people need to talk up the profession. And then I think the Grow Your Own Teacher programs are some real possibilities to get more teachers into the profession. I know Fort Zumwalt, it's worked out pretty well for us. I know we have about 20 teachers that have previously gone through the Grow Your Own Teacher program now. We have another 12 or 13 that are in the pipeline. So grow your own teacher programs, talk well about education, get salaries up, keep class sizes down. And, you know, Mike, the problem with all that is that it costs money.
Right.
And when you talk with the legislature, I think very often the legislators say, oh, my gosh, you guys are asking for more money again? Well, it's not a cheap operation. If people want students to do well, it's going to cost money. And I'm afraid that, you know, we tapped our local taxpayers about as much as we can. So we need some help from the state. And they've been pretty good to us, but we've got to get these salaries up. There's just no other answer to it.
Well, we appreciate your 54 years in education, and I know a lot of those as superintendent was running the fastest growing school district in the state of Missouri, and you did it very well. All three of my kids went through, and they're alive today, so that's a win. Believe it or not, you'll appreciate this. Megan is graduating from UCM this weekend. So
is she really?
We made it all the way through.
You say congratulations from me.
I will do so. And you tell Susan congratulations from me. We appreciate you working us in today.
I will do it.
That is Dr. Bernie DeBray. He was the superintendent of Fort Zumwalt School District for 38 years. And for 20 of that, it was the fastest growing school district in the state of Missouri.
Wow.
So he built three high schools during his time. Actually, he built four high schools, but one of them was already a high school. He just built a new version of it.
So he's going, or he went through basically what Wentzville is going through right now.
Very much so, and Orchard Farm as well. So two of the fastest growing school districts. You know, just thinking about that, you know, Sue, your grandmother was taught a one-room schoolhouse. My mom taught a one-room schoolhouse in Mexico. I can't imagine what it was like back then, but I know discipline was a much different issue than what it is right now. I think that's kind of funny. He started teaching citizenship in Pattonville way back when. So he used to be a principal at my wife's elementary school when she was a little kid.
Oh,
so
wow.
It was kind of funny that he ended up being the superintendent of our school district.
That's crazy. Wow.
Life has full circles that kind of work out. Hey, we are going to do the audio cut of the day when we come back on the other side. My name is Mike Elam. You are listening to The Mark Reardon Show. Mark will be back here on Thursday, and I'm sure he is going to be just ready to go, full of grease, and ready to spill it right here on 97.1 FM Talk. So we're starting to learn some patterns in Sue's music choices. Because when you picked the other day, you had some ELO in there.
Yeah, I love the ELO.
And now we're back to ELO again.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't put, what was the group that he was in? The Traveling Wilburys.
Yeah, that does nothing for me.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of surprising.
That'd be why.
I thought you would go for that.
No.
No?
No.
Okay. So... So we're going to skip on that. Hey, so tomorrow you are going to have a repeat performance of Brad Young, who's going to be back in the studio. Mark is going to be back in the chair on Thursday. We hope, okay? I say we hope because have you been watching this stuff that they've been talking about with Newark and the airport and how they actually lost radar? For some reports said 30 seconds, but it goes up to 90 seconds.
Oh, that's not good.
That they actually lost radar of the planes in Newark. As a matter of fact, here's some audio that they have of a tower talking to the plane. It's cut number 7. It's kind of scary, actually.
United 674, we lose radar contact lost. We lost our radar.
Do I have Bravo clearance?
No, you do not have a Bravo clearance. We lost our radar, and it's not working correctly. Radar service terminates, block VFR, green change approved. If you want a Bravo clearance, you can just call the towers when you get closer. We don't have a radar, so I don't know where you are.
We don't have a radar, so I don't know where you are.
Jeez.
That is pretty scary. Now, I heard a guy earlier doing a report who was talking about the fact of kind of how this works. It wasn't like the plane had been handed off to the local airport. But it sounds like when a plane is flying, say, from Chicago to St. Louis, there is the tower that will help them get out of Chicago. But once they get up out of Chicago, they get picked up by a different radar.
Sure.
And they shepherd them all the way to kind of where they're going. And then when they get close to the St. Louis airport, they will send a little ping, for lack of a better term, out to the local airport and say, hey, do you see us? And then the local airport says, hey, we've got them from here. You can let them go.
Interesting.
And they'll take you the rest of the way in. That's my very novice understanding of how this works.
And which one went out? The one bringing them in?
The one bringing them into Newark. So Newark actually lost them. Sean Duffy, who is the transportation secretary, has walked into just kind of a hornet's nest of stuff. Remember the helicopter plane crash that happened in D.C. at Reagan? So this was his response. Cut six.
We have really old infrastructure in America. It hasn't been updated in the last 30, 40 years. This should have been dealt with in the last administration. They did nothing. And so for 30 seconds, we lost contact with air traffic.
That's a big problem.
But it's a sign that we have a frail system in place. We are going to radically transform the way air traffic control looks. We're going to build a brand new air traffic control system, from new telecom to new radars to new infrastructure. We're bringing on new air traffic controllers. This has been a problem in the decades coming, and we're going to fix it.
It's just kind of crazy of how long this has been going on. Because I've been hearing about this for a really long time. Wow. I mean, they talk about some of these systems go back to the 60s and 70s when you look at some of the really old systems that are out there.
That is
frightening. But like he's saying, hasn't been updated in 30 years.
Good grief.
So you're looking at some really old technology that is up in these towers, and they've got to spend the money to update it, but where are you going to get the money?
Mm.
Right? So we'll see where all of that stuff is going to play out. But I keep a good thought for Mark Reardon landing his plane as he is coming back from Greece, because I'm sure at Lambert things are much, much better. And he's going to... He's going to land with no problems whatsoever. It's funny, we were talking before about Bernie was giving his opinion of why Trump won. Gavin Newsom was talking about why the Democrats lost. But it's funny how Bernie has really emerged again. And he keeps being that voice. You know, in 2016, he was making a run at Hillary Clinton, and it looked like he may actually upset her. And then they pretty much shut him down with the, what were those special delegates that they gave them back then? Super delegates.
Oh, okay.
They had super delegates that got named for Clinton, and that's basically how they shut Bernie out back in 2016. He was making a run in 2020, and they didn't want him to do that, so they shut him down, and they put Biden in there. Now, obviously, last year, they didn't give him an opportunity.
No.
They put Kamala in there. Right away. Actually, Joe put Kamala in there right away and said, hey, we're going to get this thing done. But Bernie keeps getting out there and he's making these big speeches. And to Bernie's credit, he's getting some pretty good crowds. But I want to play this piece of audio for you and tell me what this sounds like to you. It's cut number one. This is Bernie speaking at a rally.
I strongly oppose Biden's continued military support to the horrific Netanyahu war against the people of Gaza.
Just listen to that crowd. It sounds very, I don't know, just very weird. I have like those Hitler flashbacks of him giving those big speeches and the crowds roaring and all that kind of stuff. He's blatantly anti-Semitic in everything that he does. He and AOC both are out there doing that kind of stuff. It's kind of crazy that the Democrat Party used to have a huge Jewish contingent. I can't imagine, if you're Jewish, why you would vote Democrat. I just don't understand why you would do that at all. It feels like the party has turned on you, kind of like we were talking earlier about union workers. Union used to be the hardcore base of the Democrats, and now union guys and girls have almost all gone Republican, and they've turned that way. It just continues to change. But when I heard that, it just kind of sent some chills down my spine. Bernie is out there getting into this crowd and getting people to react in ways that I just find crazy, for lack of a better term. Now, Bernie's always kind of been crazy, but that's kind of how it is. But that brings us, when I talk about crazy, to my flagship person and nominated for Crazy Person of the Year and our audio cut of the day.
Stand by. Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
This is my favorite crazy lately, who just showed up on the stage over this past year. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you all kinds of crazy in Jasmine Crockett.
Do you think you are the future of the Democratic Party? And if not, who else is?
I don't know that I'm the future of the Democratic Party, but I do know that in this moment, we need people that are unafraid and willing to go after this administration for the good of the entirety of the country.
I hope that she is the future of the Democratic Party, because if she is, we're going to be Republican for years to come. Hey, it's been fun playing with you guys on radio. Can't wait for Mark to be back. Enjoy your week. This is Mike Elam. Thanks for listening. 97.1.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.